It is a miracle that we know anything at all about the man called Jesus of Nazareth. The itinerant preacher wandering from village to village, clamoring about the end of the world, a band of ragged followers trailing behind, was a common sight in Jesus' time. So common, in fact, that it had become a kind of caricature among the Roman elite. In a farcical passage about just such a figure, the Greek philosopher Celsus imagines a Jewish holy man roaming the Galilean countryside, shouting to no one in particular, "I am God, or the servant of God, or a divine spirit, but I am coming, for the world is already in the throes of destruction, and you will soon see me coming with the power of heaven." The first century was an era of apocalyptic expectation among the Jews of Palestine. The Roman designation for the vast tract of land encompassing modern-day Israel-Palestine, as well as large parts of Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon. Countless prophets, preachers, and messiahs tramped through the Holy Land, delivering messages of God's imminent judgment. Many of these so-called false messiahs we know by name. A few are even mentioned in the New Testament. The prophet Theudas, according to the book of Acts, had 400 disciples, before Rome captured him and cut off his head. A mysterious charismatic figure known only as the Egyptian raised an army of followers in the desert, nearly all of whom were massacred by Roman troops. In 4 BCE, the year in which most scholars believe Jesus of Nazareth was born, a poor shepherd named Athronges put a diadem on his head and crowned himself King of the Jews. He and his followers were brutally cut down by a legion of soldiers. Another messianic aspirant, called simply the Samaritan, was crucified by Pontius Pilate even though he raised no army and in no way challenged Rome, an indication that the authorities, sensing the apocalyptic fever in the air, had become extremely sensitive to any hint of sedition. There was Hezekiah the bandit chief, Simon of Perea, Judas the Galilean, his grandson Menachem, Simon son of Giora, and Simon son of Kachba, all of whom declared messianic ambitions, and all of whom were killed for doing so. Add to this list the Essene sect, some of whose members lived in seclusion atop the dry plateau of Qumran on the northwestern shore of the Dead Sea, the first century Jewish revolutionary party known as the Zealots, who helped launch a bloody war against Rome, and the fearsome bandit assassins whom the Romans dubbed the Sicarii, or the Dagger Men. And the picture that emerges of first century Palestine is of an era awash in messianic energy. It is difficult to place Jesus of Nazareth squarely within any of the known religio-political movements of his time. He was a man of profound contradictions, one day preaching a message of racial exclusion, as in Matthew 15:24, "I was sent solely to the lost sheep of Israel," the next of benevolent universalism, as in Matthew 28:19, "Go and make disciples of all nations." Sometimes calling for unconditional peace, as in Matthew 5:9, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God." Sometimes promoting violence and conflict, as in Luke 22:36, "If you do not have a sword, go sell your cloak and buy one." The problem with pinning down the historical Jesus is that, outside of the New Testament, there is almost no trace of the man who would so permanently alter the course of human history. The earliest and most reliable non-biblical reference to Jesus comes from the first century Jewish historian Flavius Josephus, who died in about 100 CE. In a brief throwaway passage in the Antiquities, Josephus writes of a fiendish Jewish high priest named Ananus, who, after the death of the Roman governor Festus, unlawfully condemned a certain, quote, "James, the brother of Jesus, the one they call Messiah," to stoning for transgression of the law. The passage moves on to relate what happened to Ananus after the new governor, Albinus, finally arrived in Jerusalem. Fleeting and dismissive as this allusion may be, the phrase, "the one they call Messiah," is clearly meant to express derision. It nevertheless contains enormous significance for those searching for any sign of the historical Jesus. In a society without surnames, a common name like James required a specific appellation, a place of birth or a father's name, to distinguish it from all the other men named James roaming around Palestine, hence Jesus of Nazareth. In this case, James's appellative was provided by his fraternal connection to someone with whom Josephus assumes his audience would be familiar. The passage proves not only that Jesus, the one they call Messiah, probably existed, but that by the year 94 CE, when the Antiquities was written, he was widely recognized as the founder of a new and enduring movement. It is that movement, not its founder, that receives the attention of second-century historians like Tacitus and Pliny the Younger, both of whom mention Jesus of Nazareth but reveal little about him, save for his arrest and execution, an important historical note, as we shall see, but one that sheds little light on the details of Jesus' life. We are therefore left with whatever information can be gleaned from the New Testament.